Welcome to Chundersmith. I'm Brian.
I'm Bob. This is Chundersmith. All right, what are we talking about today, Brian?
Let's talk about story. Let's start with Star Wars.
Star Wars?
Oh, God. I haven't had one of those in a while.
Detestable. Star Wars is the ultimate fan wank, bad story, no narrative nonsense piece of garbage stuff. It's a cult. It's a bad cult. It's even less coherent than the Bible. I mean that. I mean that literally. I mean that technically.
You know, the Bible's had more authors.
Yeah, well, I mean, barely. Yeah. You know, whatever George Lucas was thinking. I mean, it's like for episodes 1, 2, and 3, I can at least give him props for innovating in terms of like videography, trying new technologies, and pushing limits that way.
And respect that. And showing the benefit of having an orchestral approach to a soundtrack instead of doing all the weird wonky shit that people have been doing.
Yeah, it kind of dates your films. What was it? Lady Hawk, that film?
Lady Hawk's a good kisser, man. Like, she got half my tongue, but, you know.
Wait, what are you talking about?
I don't know. Just, she's a lady, she's a hawk. That beak sharp, man.
Oh, my gosh. No, I'm talking about the film from the 80s, Lady Hawk, with Rutger Hauer and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about. Actually, I love that film. It's one of my favorites. I grew up watching it as a kid. The soundtrack is horrendous. somebody needs to re-release it with an orchestral soundtrack.
Like, I'd be fine with that.
Like, except for the part where... Like the electronic keyboard where there's the dee 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 doo dee dee doo dee dee doo dee dee doo dee when the moon is rising, I think that part can stay because that creates a sufficiently correct atmosphere. But then as soon as you get the dur 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 and the like all those
clearly synthetic sounds.
Yeah, it wasn't good. And I'm just like over here, like, okay, are we gonna have a good soundtrack? Anyone?
Are we?
Anyone?
Hey, Brad, Bueller? Are we gonna have a good soundtrack?
Bueller?
Hey, I'm asking a question.
Are we? I don't know. Are we? We should come up with a soundtrack.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
Do you want me to come up with a nice retro sound like I got from my other podcast?
Yeah.
All right, I can do that. I like making retro stuff.
Let's make it happen, man.
All right, well, we can do that, but it's not going to be Lady Hawk. Just you wait. Now it's going to be Lady Hawk soundtrack. If you make it like
Lady Hawk, I will be so happy.
But the reason I made the Ferris Bueller reference is because the actor who plays Ferris Bueller plays the monk in Lady Hawk. And so, speaking of good story...
That's quite clever. That is quite clever.
What's that?
That's quite clever. Matthew Broderick, yeah.
Yeah, Matthew Broderick. He was he did such a good job. I really enjoyed his character. He played the role well. And you know, it was a good story. There was a good hero's journey and a redemption cycle and a lot of really solid storytelling in that film, despite the horrendous soundtrack, which is one of the reasons why it's so heartbreaking to me now looking back. And you know, with my nostalgia lenses off. Which, let's be honest, the nostalgia lenses are one of the reasons why so many bad things persist. With my nostalgia lenses off, I can look at the film and go, okay, music not so great, but story fantastic.
I remember when I was a little kid watching Iron Eagle on repeat, Spartacus on repeat, Bedknobs on Broomsticks. We didn't have TV. Very often at all. We had access to some things, but, you know, typically we didn't have TV, but we did have a VCR, so we'd record everything. And we had Lady Hawk, but my mom always looked for expurgated versions of things, so we'd record it off the television because the editing had already been done. She couldn't stand the concept that human beings, especially females, might have boobies.
Oh, geez. My. Oh, that's terrible. You know, we also were limited to our access for television, but it was because we lived on a ridge and there was a broadcast tower immediately above us. And so it kind of drowned out all other signals, and we'd sometimes get a signal. I think it was when our antenna on top of our house was working, but at one point it broke. Mm-hmm. And my dad was just like, I'm not bothered to try to repair it. It's too expensive. And I'm, you know, looking back now as a kid, I was, first off, I don't think I understood that it was broken, but my siblings did and they were pissed by that. But looking back now, I'm like, you know what? He's right. It's such a waste of money to spend like, you know, $1,000 for broadcast television. You know, just subscribe to Netflix or something. Yeah, but all joking aside, we actually had some neighbors who lived only about a mile or two away, which was not that big of a walk for me as a kid. I do it regularly.
Yeah,
and they had a massive VHS library. We're talking huge. Like it would, they were a straight up video store, and they prided themselves in their editing capacity. And so one of my fondest memories is watching Top Gun with the sex scene edited out. And to be fair, the sex scene in Top Gun, because it was a PG-13 movies in the 90s, or was it late 80s? I forget. It really doesn't matter. It was not that great anyways. And the what they did was way better, because the start of the sex scene was two black and white trains ramming head on into each other. and then I don't know if you ever saw there's a scene from this other movie. I don't even know what the movie is, but it's like these couples running towards each other, and it's like la 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 la. La 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 la, and there's like the male and the female, and the guy runs past the woman and proceeds to hug this lion and frolic with it and roll with it on the ground, and it was okay. Yes, like a lion that he was friends with. You know, he was just frolicking. It was a strange juxtaposition on top of a strange juxtaposition. But it was just hilarious. And to me as a kid, it was hilarious. And to me as an adult, it's hilarious. And to be fair, I want the Top Gun Win Cut. That's the name of the family, the Wins. They're fantastic folks. I miss the hell out of them. But that
what is the Win Cut? What is that?
Wins, the name of the family. W-I-N-N.
Are you saying this family did a cut of the film?
Yeah, where they edited out the sex scene.
All that. Oh, okay. Yeah,
because they're I thought they were the coolest family ever, and to be fair, they are probably one of the coolest families I've ever encountered. Their dad was an engineer of some sort. I can't remember the details. He always told the best stories. He had the most melodious voice. Just a fun guy, and they were into technology. I think he might have been a computer engineer. And so they encouraged technological usage, and I think their boys were the ones who did the edit on Top Gun to make it that way. And it was fantastic. And they were literally like, going visiting them was a combination of multiple reinforcers. It was like going over there meant we could jump on their giant Olympic sized trampoline that they had outside. They would let us swim at their pool on a regular basis. If I ever got over there without my mom knowing about it, I could hang out with, he was more my brother's buddy because he was closer to my brother's age, but they tolerated my existence, which was nice. And I could hang out with Glenn and Chris, and we could play the Sega Genesis that they had.
Oh, that stuff is so fun.
Yeah. And just like, you know,
did you ever have that kind of like, you're like 13, 14 years old, you're late, it's late at night at your best friend's house, and you're just playing, I don't know, I don't even know what game it is, like some little Sega Genesis helicopter game, and or Ren and Stimpy, or any of those games. Just, I mean, like, into the dawn, and you just feel like the worst you've ever felt, Because you like abused your body all night playing video games. You ever had those?
Exactly one experience like that, because my parents were very strict about the sleepover thing, and it was for a birthday party that I tricked my brother into thinking it was my birthday party, and it was his birthday party. Because we're 1 month apart, and he didn't think he was going to get a birthday party. And it was supposed to be both of our birthday parties, but our buddies, because we had a lot of shared buddies, they didn't catch the memo that it was both of ours. They thought it was just Chris's, so they brought him presents. And
sounds heartbreaking.
Unfortunately, that's kind of the story of my birthday, because it's always been subsumed by Thanksgiving. But I don't know. Maybe it was a defining moment in my character, because I was like, you know what? I had a fun time. This was fun, and I'm okay with my brother being the one who gets a little of the attention and a lot of the love. And so the experience I have is staying up until the crack of dawn, drinking Martinelli's out of the bottle, and playing GoldenEye until
exactly Martinelli's and James Bond.
Yes,
he suddenly feels so cool.
but like when I was a little younger kid, like I got okay. So one time we went over to the Workman, I think was their last name. We went over to our neighbor's house. Who lived slightly closer, and my brother and I hung out with him, and he invited us to play Duck Hunt, but my mom had insisted that we weren't allowed to listen, weren't allowed to play with the music on, because it would make it more addicting to play it. And and Chris said we shouldn't, and I said, screw this, I want to hear the music because it makes it more fun. And so we played without the music, and then as soon as we get home, Chris rats on me and tells mom that I said it was okay. It was okay to listen to the music while we were playing Duck Hunt of all freaking things.
Like, I love you, Chris. I'll never
forgive you.
I don't understand this stuff. Like parents, like these weird impositions. A couple weekends ago, my mom came up with some of my nephews, and we had lunch together. My mom was constantly chastising my nephews. Oh, take off your coat. You don't want to do this. Oh, you have to do this. Take off your coat because you're indoors, and then there'll be no different. You know, just like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I asked her. I was like, do you need to control this? Is this something you need to control?
Well, it's like the whole, you can't go outside without your coat on because you'll catch your death of cold. And I'm like, actually, it'll make them stronger. Like all the data and all the research shows that going outside with, like, we're not talking about like sub-zero weather in fucking Michigan here. I'm talking like, you know, going outside and the temperature is somewhere around zero, maybe a little bit below. There's minimal wind chill factor. It's a dry cold, and we're going to be outside for a grand total of maybe 20 minutes, and that's pushing it. And it's like, no, they're going to get sick if they don't go out. If they go outside without a coat on, and it's just like, do you not know
silly superstitions?
Do you not know how good cold is for a human?
No, they like, don't. Well, so that's the other half of, you know, that's the other half of the blade. It's like, number one, it's this pointless exertion of control that's actually to the detriment of the people that they're admonishing. It's obnoxious.
You know what is? You know what is bad for them? If you walk up to them, lick your hand, and push their hair down after licking your goddamn hand. That's bad for them. Because you're probably carrying a bacteria or a virus that's going to make them sick.
Yeah.
And, you know, and yet we're so insistent about this whole wearing coats thing, and it's so stupid. But anyway, so strange juxtapositions.
Bunch of shamanism. It's a bunch of make-believe, man. All right, dude. The name of the episode is Star Wars, man. Story, the narrative of Star Wars.
Okay. Are you going to say it or am I going to say it?
What, Jar Jar Binks should have been Count Dooku, or what?
That one is true. That one is true, too. But what about reference to our crap? Why am I blanking? The Joseph Campbell. You gonna reference Joseph Campbell, or should I?
No, go ahead. You do it.
All right. So here are 1,000 Faces. It's a book. It talks about the repetitive nature of stories throughout the ages and the redemption cycle, the hero's journey, all this other stuff. I'll be honest with you. I read it. It's one of the world's biggest snooze fests. reading The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire was less painful, in my opinion, because it was more interesting. And if you don't realize that The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire covers a span of 2 or 3 books that are not small books, just saying. So story and that sort of thing. So one of the reasons why Star Wars did so well is because, story-wise, is because it follows the hero's journey. It follows redemption cycles for the villains, things like that, which are basically tales that are told and retold throughout history, throughout cultures, that sort of thing. So it's a decent enough story, at least for the original series. And the prequel series, it take out all the... Okay, first off, one of the reasons why the first two Star Wars movies were so fantastic was because George Lucas didn't have full creative control. The fact of the matter is when George Lucas is given the reins, it's almost as bad as who was it? Kathy McDonald?
Well, I don't know who I don't know what you're talking about.
The creative director for the latest trilogy.
Oh, no, that was Rian Johnson, but not really. I mean, he did the first two, and then that was taken over by J.J. Abrams for the latest.
Oh, well, you're talking about the directors. I'm referring to the kind of the head behind the stories, the overarching person.
I couldn't speak to that at all.
Yeah, I'm gonna use Google. I'm gonna Google it up right now. Doug Chang. Whatever. It's the ear of an elephant. It's irrelevant. The whole point is that the reason why Return of the Jedi was not at nearly as good as the first two films, even though it completed the cycle, and some people would argue it's better. In my opinion, it's not. And the reason why the prequel series was so convoluted, I guess would be the best way of putting it, is because George Lucas was just given free rein. And, you know, I'm not saying that George Lucas is a bad storyteller. That would be false, because he's told some good stories. But I am saying that George Lucas, without reins and people to call him on his bullshit, is like Queen, where Freddie Mercury is the one and only singer, songwriter, and participant.
His breakaway project wasn't that great.
Yeah,
there's a lot of great minds out there that need a coterie, a cadre, a council, a coven. Who knows? You know, a group of people to admonish them, wisely. Yes.
Yeah, you know, and some people recognize that and early on, and they realize how important it is, and others. Others don't recognize it, and they fight the process the whole way through, or at least until they have to come up against short, sharp jerks of harsh reality. There are definitely creative teams that have succeeded to accomplish a lot of things. Abraham Lincoln is actually a perfect example. He recognized early on that he needed conflict in his cabinet, and so he actually went to his political opponents and invited them in. And wanted them there. And these were people who were saying some of the most vile things about him. Mm-hmm. and about his relationship with his wife, which may or may not have been true. But the point being that, like, yeah, that creativity, some people function well on their own. Other people other people need to have a creative group.
Well, I think there's actually more a question there, not so much of learning style. I mean, that's more about learning styles, but also probably more about like early childhood socialization, and were they adequately rewarded in social scenarios, or were they punished for being social?
No. So frankly, most humans are pretty damn boring on their own.
Yeah, but well, it's like if you have a good team of people who are willing, who have enough vision to put aside their own immediate gratification to be able to collaborate together. That really does seem to be the limiting thing, is the ability to put aside, like, to imagine, the ability to put aside the ego and to imagine that there could be a good outcome. And it's the thing that produces the best outcomes of all, you know, but that's neither here nor there, but it reminds me of back when I lived in the hood, and you'd get these really egotistical, impoverished people, and they didn't have the imagination as to how to organize, how to specialize. When I lived in the hood, what I saw was a lot of people who had to be generalists because trust was so low.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and that's unfortunately the reality of that environment. It's just so dog eat dog.
Yeah. And you know what else is a low trust environment? Any script that George Lucas touches, it's just like he's going to just, I did it. Full circle. I'm pretty irritated. It's like it could have been so good. This was like the American story. Darth Vader is Big Daddy America. You know what I mean?
I don't know. Like, have you seen the footage of the German Star Wars rock opera? I think Germany embraced that. Oh, you didn't know about this?
No, I did not.
Oh, it's so funny.
Is it supposed to be funny, or is it just accidental?
It is not supposed to be funny. It's not. Just think.
That's kind of funny.
Think late 70s. So, you know how cultural norms go out in waves, and different cultural norms, it hit different groups at different times. So,
yeah.
For example, during the mid to late 80s, there was another British invasion when it came to music. Well, likewise, disco invaded from the United States. I am so sorry to every other country outside of the United States for disco. Please forgive us. Please.
No, I like disco.
You know what? Screw you and the horse you came in on. Screw
you. I like it.
All right, well, you go join the Y.
You know, it's the violin. It's that they do this post-rock thing where they're bringing back the orchestra in novel ways, and they're using interesting mathematics and peculiar rhythm structures.
Okay, well, long story short,
it's just garbage. It's bubblegum. You can chew on it, but there's nothing to digest.
Yeah, well, you could chew on it, but you're gonna feel a little sick later because it's the early bubble gum that's like basically poisoning if you eat it.
Yeah, I'm saying modern pop. Come on, it's been a downward spiral.
It goes through phases of bullshit. Whatever
it does, but I mean the demoralization is almost complete.
So there was a bit of a counter invasion, or we could say a third invasion of Germany by disco, American disco, and they embraced it hard enough to create a Star Wars disco rock opera thing.
That's so good.
And I think Mark Hamill actually performed in it.
I feel like I'm such a novice at Star Wars. So yeah, I want to tell you a story. I need to tell you a story.
We really need to have that boy on here when we're talking about Star Wars. We need to really have that boy on. He knows his stuff.
Oh, he knows his stuff. Well, I also wanted to talk about another guy who's also a Star Wars aficionado. He was my first friend in St. George, Utah, when I first moved to Southern Utah back in like 2005. His name's Paul. I think I'll just say Paul to protect him.
I may have met Paul, yeah.
You might have met Paul. Well, Paul always had this like vision. Before I met him, he was a super, ultra Star Wars nerd. Knew all the factoids, all the extended universe, everything. He was to the walls in his studies. And he had
Would one say that they were spherical objects that were to the wall?
Bone sphere! Hang on, I'll get back to that in a second. So, he had been on a radio show as like the Star Wars nerd that if somebody could stump him, then they won prizes, and people did not win very often. He was good. He was good on campus. I don't remember what university it was, but so he was this ultra nerd, and he was working for my brother alongside me, and my brother had sent him these illustration jobs, and this guy was, he was good. He was really good, but he wouldn't apply himself very much. And, he'd kind of screw off for a couple days if he wasn't feeling it. I mean, he was kind of an artist's artist. The kind of guy who, like, needs the iron to preheat itself. Like, inspiration must truly strike, but when it strikes, it's so good. And he went on. He moved to California, went to Pasadena, went to Art Center. Got really well trained, worked on, I think he worked on Mars Needs Moms or whatever. He worked on a Christmas movie by the same company. I can't remember what they're called.
Well, I think Mars Meets Moms did Polar Express.
Yeah, what was the name of that company?
I don't know,
but it's a good
thing. All I know is that the way they did the eyes.
Yes, that torpedo.
It was terrifying.
It was terrifying, and that torpedoed the company. That torpedoed, they were donezo. So he moved back home, having gone to Art Center, just oodles of money and debt, and with this outrageous skill. He went on to go work for freaking Lucasfilm for a while.
Okay.
I mean, he told me his dreams and visions a decade prior, and he fulfilled all of them, and he had fulfilled them. I mean, kind of epic stuff, like going and working for the people that were most inspirational to you, and just being put through that meat grinder. It's production art. It's, you know, so you're just cranking away day in and day out in big art mills like that. And when he came home, he was the most depressed person I think I'd ever laid eyes on. He was like, he said something along the lines of like, don't fulfill your goals because you'll have nothing left to live for.
So the studio in question is Image Movers Digital. And Image Movers Digital went out of business and was absorbed by Image Movers, the umbrella corporation. Of the, you know, the corporation that basically went over it. I did a quick look up. The Image Movers is the studio that produced Castaway and What Lies Beneath, to name a couple. And more recently, they did the Disney version of The Christmas Carol with Disney, of course. And in that one, obviously, they didn't make the fatal error of those eyes, because it did pretty well in the box office. So, backstory for you. Anyways, back to your story. I apologize for disrupting that.
No, that's it. So that's, I'm talking about an actual person who went on the actual hero's journey, you know, inspired by Star Wars, the quintessential American hero's journey of the modern era. And
that's fantastic.
And he went on the hero's journey, and now he's done the same thing that Skywalker did, live in exile, basically. I think he's installing satellite dishes, and he just does an incredible amount of hiking and mountain climbing, that sort of thing. Skinny as a rail, super fit, you know, but that's It's like he just wanted to spend the rest of his life climbing rocks.
You know, that's fair, though. Like, I don't know. Like, when I was younger and I saw all those people who are going out and, like, river rafting around the world or biking or mountain climbing and stuff, I kind of scoffed at them. And now I'm looking back and I'm going, like, God, I wish I had done that. Now I want to go do that. Like, maybe not the mountain climbing bit. Like, I like my feet firmly planted on the ground. Thank you very much. But,
yeah,
like, you know, river rafting sounds cool. I definitely would get into that. I'd probably be grumpy with it initially. I have to get used to it.
Yeah, it's
but I love hiking.
River rafting is a lot of fun. Well, especially if you're going downstream, it's just a lot of fun.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I don't mind kayaking when, you know, the straps are appropriately set up.
Well, yeah, you know who didn't mind what else? Luke didn't mind being rescued by Han from that big wampa. I brought a bag of Star Wars, everyone. And that's a wrap. Great episode. Thank you, Brad. That was splendid. I'll catch you on the flip side.
All right. Wait. Hold on. The conversation
is over? It's been 31 minutes.
Hold on a second. I don't understand why.